This is Cape Talk.
Next up, we're talking to News 24 specialist legal journalist Karen Morn. She's a well-known South African journalist who has established herself as one of the leading voices in investigative journalism. She's widely respected for her fearless reporting on complex legal cases and political corruption and has been recognized for her outstanding work with a number of prestigious awards. Karen's work has played a vital role in exposing some of the most high-profile scandals in South Africa's recent history, including the state capture allegations again involving former President Jacob Zuma. And despite facing legal challenges and threats, Karen remains committed to holding those in power accountable and to providing South Africans with the information they need to make informed decisions. She's been in the High Court in Pietermaritzburg this week in an extraordinary case that impacts media freedom. Facing off against the former President Jacob Zuma is an intimidating prospect for anybody. And I'm so happy to have her join us on the line now to talk about her experience. Good morning, Karen.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to talk to you.
It's so lovely to talk to you. I've been so excited to talk to you all week. Can you provide us with a brief overview of the private prosecution case that former President Jacob Zuma has brought against you?
Well, essentially what's happened is he's tried to argue that the sharing of court papers with me by NPA advocate or the private advocate who was working for the NPA at the time, Andrew Breidenbach, amounts to a criminal violation of the NPA Act, which makes it an offense for a prosecutor to share information within the possession of the NPA with anyone without the, you know, unless there's permission provided by the NDPP. We, of course, are arguing that court papers are public documents, but that provision only relates to and can only relate to information that's confidential, you know, the kind of thing that's in a docket or would enable a criminal accused in a corruption case to have some kind of advantage, And that what essentially he's trying to do is to force the removal of Downer, who has been his prosecutor for a number of years now, is absolutely brilliant at what he does. He's failed to remove him in a special plea process, and he's now essentially trying to force his removal through this criminal prosecution. With me, it's really in relation to the fact that I've been reporting on his case from the beginning. I'm the last reporter left from that group who started with me. And knowing, you know, the ins and outs of his case and being able to report the inconsistencies or the contradictions in his matter to the general public, I think we are arguing has very much put me in the line of fire.
Well, I think that's such an interesting point because, as you say, your experience on this case goes back, you know, more, 2 decades. And I read a very interesting article written by assistant editor for investigations at News 24, Peter de Toy, who wrote an editorial about why News 24 has decided to keep you on the story. And I think it's a great decision. But as he writes in his editorial, also, you know, something that they had to really weigh up. What do you think about that decision?
You know, I'm so grateful to News 24 because they have been so overwhelmingly supportive. And this is an expensive exercise. Like the amounts that have been spent on legal fees, for example, are quite, you know, it's quite an overwhelming thing, but they never once said that they were not going to defend me. And because our case is that this is about silencing me, you know, Mzwanele Manyi, who's the Zuma Foundation spokesperson at one point, was saying that, no, you know, questioning whether I could report on anything related to Zuma because of the fact that, as he put it, you know, I was conflicted, et cetera, et cetera. Our stance is that just like Billy Downer has declined to step down from the prosecution, I am not going to stop reporting on this case. People, the general public is well aware that I've been charged. It's forefronted in all the stories. It's not concealed. It's directly put there. If they feel that, you know, I am not providing the same kind of coverage that I was, that, you know, there's an imbalance or whatever it is, they're very right and proper to raise those issues. But as I always have, I have maintained my absolute best efforts to report coolly, calmly on facts that are within my knowledge, to report what they're saying, what their arguments are, and ultimately to have hope and faith in our court system which I believe in. I believe in rule of law, to make the right decision. And I'm grateful that News 24 has made the decision that it has, because the obvious implications would be that if I am taken off from reporting this, then it maybe potentially becomes a mechanism to get rid of problematic journalists by criminally charging them with these kind of private prosecutions and then arguing that they shouldn't be allowed to report. And the implications for journalism in South Africa of that are truly terrifying.
Absolutely. I mean, the impact on press freedom in South Africa, what do you think this case, how do you think it will impact?
You know, I'm very disturbed at the moment because, you know, journalists, particularly female journalists, oftentimes find themselves the targets of all kinds of forms of attack and intimidation. And the terrible reality is, Catherine, that unfortunately, because of the state of law enforcement in the country, it's often our colleagues who are exposing the kind of things that really should be exposed and investigated by the police. I think of the exemplary work done by someone like Jeff Wicks on the Bibita Dekaran murder.
Yes.
What he has been able to uncover, which maybe, you know, in terms of what she was investigating, which may never have seen the light of day. Kyle Clutty with the Clutter Murray story. And then, of course, Groundup.
Kyle Cowan.
Kyle Cowan.
Yeah.
The exemplary work that Groundup has done on
the Thabo Bester case. Absolutely.
I mean, we don't know if that would have ever come into the public domain. You're literally talking about someone who was an absolutely horrendous serial rapist.
And murderer.
Yeah. And what he did, uncovered, investigated by the police and now is able to escape. So journalism in a country with a dysfunctional and inadequate, and I would say oftentimes very deeply corrupted, law enforcement system, journalism is essential, because how else do we get to the truth of things? And to use private prosecution as a mechanism of silencing a journalist on a baseless case, it cannot stand. And that's why we're fighting this hard. There was a big part of me that was like, let me just go on trial, because I know there's absolutely no evidence against us. But if we'd done that and we'd allowed them to do this so easily to us, it could have sent a very, very damaging precedent to force other journalists into courtroom for weeks on months on end on cases that were never going to stand. And that's why we're fighting as hard as we are.
And have you received a lot of support from the public? I saw there were protesters outside court who were there specifically for you, and you seem to be quite emotional and moved. Mm. So from an emotional point of view, what has the support been like, and how have you been coping from that perspective?
You know, the thing is, Catherine, Twitter is not real life. People often see the kind of things that people will say to me. People are saying that, I was going to be raped in prison, celebrating that, obviously like wanting me to get killed and things like that. But in real life, we have the best people in this country. People will walk up to you. When I was in the airport on Wednesday, this young man came up to me and said, you're my hero. And then this other lady, she's like, are you Karen Moore? And I was like, yes. And she gave me a big hug. On the day that I was charged, I was walking in the waterfront.
Amazing.
And I was so shattered and overwhelmed and just really like, just that anxiety of what is going to happen now. And this young man walked up to me and he said, he was wearing a mask, and he said to me, my sister, the country is behind you. And I said, yeah, but I've just been charged. And he said, I know, I hear that, but the country is behind you. And he gave me a big hug. I have never had an adverse interaction with any kind of member of the public. People fist pump me. They give me high fives. They're like, we're with you. Don't give up. And it's all kinds of people from all walks of life. And, that's the thing about South Africa. You go to other places overseas, people won't look you in the eye. They're very distant. Just our way of being as people is that we care deeply. We want a better country. We all want a better future for our kids. And, the overwhelming response that I've had from people has just been, keep fighting, keep strong. We're behind you, and don't give up. And that really, really, really helps me.
And what advice would you give to young journalists who may be facing similar challenges in their futures?
I think the thing for me is that I am a Christian and I believe in God, and I really do genuinely believe that this was the purpose that God had for my life. Okay. And so I'm not here for myself, you know?
Yes.
And there was this amazing quote, I think it's by Tim Keller or Nikki Gumbel. He was basically quoting this guy who was saying that courage isn't about saying like, oh, I can do this. It's about saying this is more important than me. And I think that's the thing. It's like you have these moments where you feel overwhelmed and like people are very cruel sometimes, particularly on social media. And then you realize like this is more important than me. Like I wasn't put on this earth to be a coward. My parents did not raise me to be a coward. I'm not going to give up fighting. There are so many people in this country, you know, who've given up so much what we come from as a country to be where we are, a democratic state. People gave up their lives, not for us to give up now because we are in a democratic dispensation that is betraying the ideals of those people. No, we have to fight harder because we have to honor what they did to get us here.
Absolutely. And, you know, Karen, before we end off our chat, there's something that makes me admire you, I think, more than most, you know, you really stands out for me. And that is the fact that you do all of this challenging work while at the same time managing a chronic condition. Can you tell us about that? It's something a lot of people don't know about you. And I think it's incredible that you managed to juggle both. Please tell us
I'm so glad you gave me the opportunity to speak about this. So I have been a type 1 diabetic since I was 4.5 years old. And, you know, you understand the dynamics of what that involves and how nerve-wracking it is. Because obviously, you know, as diabetics, we have to constantly monitor our blood sugar, inject ourselves with insulin at appropriate moments. And we can also have life-threatening conditions in terms of diabetic ketoacidosis and also in terms of low blood sugar episodes, which can result in our death. You know, I knew two diabetics that I was, you know, a child pediatric diabetic with who both passed away at very young ages and the kind of anxiety that will bring to a parent. But I was incredibly lucky. I think like God has protected me so much, but it is difficult. I mean, when all of this happened, and you will understand this, my blood sugar was shooting all over the place. In the weeks before this court appearance, I had some very, very serious low blood sugar episodes, which my parents had to manage and deal with, and they were amazing. And, you know, I'm incredibly privileged and fortunate because I am a white South African middle-class woman who has access to medical aid, who's always had the best care, hasn't had to rely on healthcare within the state system. So I've had a lot of advantages that many of our fellow diabetics in the state system has not had. But I mean, the older you get, the more you realize like everyone has a struggle of some kind. Sometimes it's a chronic medical condition. Sometimes it's a battle with depression and anxiety. Sometimes it's unbelievable grief that they're dealing with, you know, a sense of betrayal and pain. And, you know, this is my particular struggle, but I, praise be to God, I'm still here. And I will, you know, I just feel very lucky that I have access to the kind of help that I do in the community that I have. Many of my fellow journalists are very well aware that I'm a diabetic and will happily like start passing me sweets when they see that I've gone pale.
Yeah. You know, it's that's the thing. You need to be prepared. And I think, you know, Karen, you mentioned that I know about it. And obviously we've talked about it many times over the years because my daughter's diabetic. So I really understand it. And I think a lot of people don't understand it. And that's why I'm always so blown away that you keep trucking no matter whether you're covering Oscar Pistorius or Jacob Zuma, you keep tracking. Have there been any memorable moments where you've been like, okay, this is not good. I'm sitting in a courtroom. It's very hot and I don't have my sweets with me and I'm going low. Anything that you can tell us?
So many. And you know who helped me a lot is old Mandy Wiener.
Oh, Mandy's the best.
Very familiar with like my diabetic. All my colleagues at one stage or another will have a story of like, Karen passing out in the edit suite, or, you know, I mean, thank heavens. Now I've got this continuous glucose monitor. It's made a major, major difference. I haven't had those kind of unexpected lows at all. But, you know, my colleagues will, you know, my colleagues and friends, it was hilarious. Like, there were so many of them during the last few days who were like, you know, I've got sweets. Eh? You know, I've got sweets.
Yeah, no, listen, I mean, since I walked with you on the prom and you had that low, I'm like, I'm never going out with you without sweets again. You definitely, you know, but you should be carrying your sweets. Why? Where are your sweets?
No, Catherine, I have got a lot better. I just, that one incident. My mom's going to hear this and be like, what happened with you and Catherine Rice not having sweets? But yes, but we have improved and we've got lots of glucose sweets and we take a Coke with us. So it is all good.
But, you know, one of the things that I've noticed with my own daughter and, you know, and I believe, you know, I don't have type 1 myself, but with caring for someone with type 1, so many things impact your sugar levels from the heat to stress. And I just wondered, you know, the stress and the adrenaline of being in court. I mean, it must have been just this week. Was it very intimidating? Did that stress affect your diabetes levels? How did you feel on those 2 days, on Monday and Wednesday?
You know, what was so strange, right, was when this first happened and I hadn't, you know, that when they first in court in 2021 started saying that, you know, there was this document was leaked and, you know, all of this. That was when I had my blood sugar. So for a normal human being, an average blood sugar is around 5. I hadn't eaten anything. I shot to 21. Sure. It went so high. And I was literally, my heart was beating. I was so anxious. I was like, what is going on?
But you feel sick when your sugar levels are that high, correct?
You feel sick. Very nauseous. You feel, it's very dangerous. I mean, high blood sugar is not as dangerous as low blood sugar. Low blood sugar is what, you know, is oftentimes the most dangerous. But high blood sugar is also dangerous if you get too high and you aren't able to bring it down, which you usually are able to do with insulin. So you'll just have an insulin injection and then try and monitor to not overreact, because that's the other thing. But during court this week, I was so calm. I think it's because so many people were praying for me. And also because for the first time, in the midst of all this misinformation, because Jacob Zuma's lawyers and followers, and he himself will make false claims like I stole his confidential medical records when I was given court papers that contained a very vague, what was described as a vague note from his doctors in them, which were filed by his own lawyers and the state. But this time it was like the facts are on the table. And it was, I mean, there were some hectic things that were said, you know, that I'm a racist bigot and I collude with the NPA. And, you know, from that to, you know, all these kind of allegations that were made. But I think it was the thing of, I really do believe in the courts. And I really do believe that the average South African person in this country is not stupid. And there was, I had a massive source of relief when those facts were put on the table. Because I just thought, yeah, okay, the truth is out. And sensible human beings are going to listen to this and they'll understand what happened perfectly. And all the rest, you know, good luck to them. But I don't have to worry about, I don't need to center my sense of well-being on those kind of accusations and that abuse.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I've absolutely loved chatting to you, Karen.
I'll
be thinking of you, and I'll be on the sidelines too, sending support and love. And I think that's definitely been the feeling that I've seen across the board. South Africans are really behind you. You're doing amazing work and don't stop doing it. Thank you for your time with us.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your support. You've always just been an amazing, you know, you've been an amazing person in my life, and I'm very grateful for you.
Thank you. That was News 24 specialist legal journalist Karen Morn. Thank you. And we now have